Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I think it's just been in the last probably 5 to 7 years. You know, I think professionally it happened sooner because in that environment, things are a little bit easier. It's easier to define success versus failure in a professional world, right? Without any sort of other validation, you can kind of get results and see if you're getting results.
How you did? How you did? That was the voice of Amy Perkins. Amy is a phenomenal woman, a woman who's gone through so much. A woman who has remained optimistic despite going through so much and has turned a lot of her life experiences into beautiful lessons. We dissect her story. We dive into what has become a passion for her as she strives to create platforms and opportunities for other women to see themselves and to fully express themselves in a world that sometimes creates limited options. And we dive into her ideas of what it takes to be successful in today's world. Today's world that is constantly trying to tell you not to be yourself. I hope you enjoy the episode, and I hope you sign up for her conference, which is going to be in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Welcome everyone to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Amy Perkins. Now, Amy is a chief strategy officer in the financial services industry and has spent 25 years discovering and aligning herself with her purpose. Amy's advocacy for women, both personally and professionally, led her to spearhead the annual Women in Consumer and Finance Conference. The group focuses largely on women sharing the story behind the successes with the hope of creating an environment where women can see themselves in others. This can be validating and empowering for women who may internalize where they come from, their past decisions, education, tragedy, and allow that to affect their perception of their worthiness and future career potential. Having grown up in rural America and experiencing her own set of tragedy, Amy has been on the quest to understand her own meaning of self-love, worthiness. Through her story and the facilitation of other people, Amy hopes to encourage people to live wide open with authenticity, with authenticity, bravery, and unapologetically on their own terms. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
Me too. I mean, I want to start off right there with those last three words there, the authenticity, bravery, and unapologetically. So I'll phrase the question this way. Why do you feel like women haven't been able to, you know, find environments where they can do this, where they can live wide open with authenticity, bravery, and unapologetically on their own terms?
Yeah, I think it's such a good question. I've spent a lot of time reflecting on that, and there's probably 10 different answers I could give you on 10 different days. But, you know, I think the main thing for me, so if I take it on the professional side first, you know, I just found that when I first came out, I was sort of naively confident, if that makes sense. You know, I came out and I was just like, oh, I didn't ever think about the fact that I was a woman and someone else was a man. I just started my career and I was very assertive and had lots of opinions and wanted my voice to be heard. And I wanted to make sure that my voice was heard. And I got a lot of mixed feedback early in my career, you know, and at one point I had an executive and he said, you know, I just think you're just maybe a little too aggressive. And my personality isn't aggressive. I can tell you that I am very assertive, but aggressive isn't something I identify with. But the way he interpreted me, I think was very much also influenced by, you know, I don't think many men get that sort of feedback, you know, that says, hey, I think you're too aggressive, you know, oftentimes that's viewed as, oh, you're a strong leader, you stand up for what you want. So I think there's some unconscious bias that we all have. We know this, right? And I do think in my particular line of work, being in consumer finance and banking, you know, I think women, at least in my experience, the more direct and assertive I became, the more pushback I seemed to get as I was moving, you know, through my career. Because of that, I swung the pendulum, you know, the other direction. And it took me a few years professionally to recover from that, because actually those things that he sort of coached out of me were the things that differentiated me and got me to that point. So, you know, I think that's one example, but I think things like that happen that then cause us to mask maybe our real personality or the real way we would address something to sort of fit the mold of what whatever particular version of corporate America or other lines of work, you know, require for you to be successful.
It's so fascinating to me because you are right. And then, you know, when you think about conditioning and programming, a lot of times when we grew up, I grew up in a household of all boys, all men. I think you know my middle brother from TikTok. And so, yeah. And I was the oldest, but you know, the way we were conditioned is, you know, men are this way, women are this way. If this is the masculine version, this is the feminine version. And ironically, as I got into my field of work, which is focused on equity, you start to figure out what you need to unlearn. And a lot of those things that I worked on learning were the programming and were how we make space for people to be their full selves. But with you particularly, you've had a personal journey yourself where you're constantly discovering yourself and rediscovering yourself and finding out elements of yourself that you might have suppressed as you get older. So I'm curious if you could let us into your world and the turning points in your life where you decided to go against conventional society and be the full woman that you always knew you could be.
Yeah. You know, I think it's just been in the last probably 5 to 7 years. You know, I think professionally it happened sooner because in that environment, things are a little bit easier. It's easier to define success versus failure in a professional world, right? Without any sort of other validation, you can kind of get results and see if you're getting results. Interesting enough, on the personal side and the way it sort of informed my career, as well as the way it's informed my personal growth to get me to this point of, like you said, unlearning and starting to recognize who I really am at my core and bringing that forward, is because I didn't come from a wealthy family. You mentioned it in my bio, I came from a very rural background. I think there was this underlying unworthiness that I sort of internalized that said, you know, I would find myself out having fancy dinners and drinking wine. And I didn't grow up in a family where that was a normal thing. I didn't know much about those sorts of things. And so I think that in some ways that has carried over and carried over. And once I, you know, got later into my years, I'd say that, you know, the loss of my mother, then the loss of my father sort of made me sit back and say, wait a second, how did I get here? You know, on the personal side, and what informed my decisions? And frankly, that my own perception of my true worthiness or what I could attain in life, I had put limits on that myself. And I think recognizing when I lost my parents and evaluating my life, it wasn't a midlife thing. It wasn't a moment. It was sort of this evolution of, wow, I have a lot of things I need to really go inside and figure out because of some of my behaviors after they passed, you know, things that I wasn't coping very well with. And honestly, the just continuing to discover those things within myself made me realize how disconnected I was from who I truly am and how I had sort of let the way the world had informed me of how I should show up so strongly influence how I did. And I decided no more.
No mas.
No more.
I love that you got to that point of recognition, because it's honestly, it's not one that many of us do. And sometimes if we do recognize it, there might be an internal battle within us where we feel like, well, if we do this, we're going to lose access to the environment we're in. And we've convinced ourselves that the environment we're in is what we need to be in. And the next question with this has to be with, I'm sure inevitably you had to cut ties with some people. You had to establish boundaries. You had to go to people that maybe you loved, and then you had to figure out how to love them from afar. And the more you were asserting yourself, you know, people probably reacted negatively to that. And I'm curious to learn how you reacted to the inevitable disconnect that comes when you become more yourself.
Yeah. So that has been, that's absolutely the toughest part, right? Because everyone comes to know you as the version of you that they've known. And a lot of times the version of me was very acceptable, you know, a people pleaser, you know, want to make people happy, certainly within my own limits. But the places where I felt most justified in asserting myself is where justice was needed. That was like, where I gave myself permission to really lean into my own true skills and personality to be like, oh, I'm going to fight this. This is just wrong. You know, I can get mad about this. I have permission because this is just wrong. But yeah, in the other ways it was different, but I'll tell you the thing that I had to get to before I could even get to the authenticity piece was really learning that I determined if I was safe or not. That was huge because I think my life was constantly ebbing and flowing with how other people were feeling or what they were, how they treated me. And like, I could just get with people where I was like, wait a second, where's the source of my anxiety in this situation or that situation? And every time it was this fear, and it wasn't a fear of acting. It was this fear of an unconscious fear of who am I without this? If I act in the way that's authentic to me and I lose my career or I lose a person I'm dating, I think there was this underlying fear of, will I have me? Can I catch myself? How do I exist outside of this thing I've let define me, a relationship or a career or whatever it is? And I had to do a lot of work there. On that journey came boundaries, and I realized I didn't know what that meant. And that I needed to put those in place. And to your point, when I started doing that, I did let go of, a relationship I was in. I let go of a couple of friendships that I had where people really, I was good to them to the extent I complied with how they wanted me to show up. And that was hard. But because I had done the work on the safety side of things to say, I am whole with or without anything else, whether I have lots of money, a little bit of money, whether I have a great relationship and partnership, or I live alone and do life, you know, on my own terms, I am whole. And I'm not going to enter into any other relationships that take away from that friendship, partnership, anything. So when people now even ask me like, oh, why aren't you just going out there and, you know, getting back into the dating world? And for me is until I meet someone else who is whole, and together our wholeness adds to our collective, whatever it is, success, happiness, then I'm good. So I think there's that, you have to kind of come to that full circle moment, I think, whatever that is for each individual.
Well, there's that misconception, you know, from the scene from Jerry Maguire, You Complete Me, that you know, I think is made a lot of people feel like you need to be halves of yourself. But what I always subscribe to, and I just heard you say it, is you need two wholes, right? You have to be a full version of a person. And if you see completion in someone else, It's inevitably going to lead to a lot of things, resentment being one of them, or loss of self being another part of that. And so doing that work is not something that we get taught in school. We get taught everything else in school, but we don't get taught emotional intelligence. We don't get taught financial literacy. That's another podcast. We don't get taught all these things that are necessary for social and personal development. And it leads us to the programming that we already have.
It's just like self-love is another good example. You know, I think that's something that, you know, coming back to the wholeness, the boundaries, the safety. I had this real journey of, you know, I was out here all the time, right, touting how much I love myself and to not feel badly about putting your own needs first. But when it came right down to it, I wouldn't have been in a position to not have boundaries and to also then have boundaries and not communicate them or communicate them and not enforce them if I truly did love myself. Because when those decisions or those things, when people violate my boundaries, it made me realize that I was choosing them and their reaction to me not complying with their boundaries. I was ranking that higher than how it made me feel when they did violate my boundaries. And that was a huge, huge growth moment for me because I had heard so much about self-love, but self-love isn't I get up and take care of myself and I make my bed every day. Certainly those are things for some people that, you know, help their life stay stable. Self-love is really, well, I choose myself over everyone else when a situation is not good for me, you know, or will I choose myself when I know that what I need to do for myself. And so a good example light bulb moment for me was my sister was struggling with organizing her own closet. And I was like, I'm there. I'm on the scene. I'm coming. I'll help you get out of this rut. And she said, but wait, you're having your own little struggle with X, Y, and Z. And I realized my love for her made me want to get her out of the situation she was stuck in. But I didn't love myself enough to do that almost exact same thing or some version of that for myself. And I say I didn't love myself, but you know what I mean? I had just built this world where most of my satisfaction came from helping other people before kind of recognizing the ways I needed to help myself to show myself that I was there for me, to then know I was safe, to then have boundaries, and then to be able to enforce those. It all just kind of comes full circle.
Would you say you're a fixer or you like to be a fixer?
Yes.
I identify with that too as well. But I was having this conversation with a friend of mine yesterday and we were talking about the good and bad of that. So I'm curious to hear, where do you think you need to fix problems around you comes from?
Well, I think the role I played in my family system, you know, I think we don't talk enough about how our siblings influence who we become just as much as our parents influence who we become. And really the combination of personalities. You know, for me, my sister and brother, very outspoken people. They didn't mind ruffling my dad's feathers. My dad was, had a temper, and so did they, and so did I. You know, we all kind of inherited this, and we'll talk about that later. Triggers, hopefully we'll get to that.
No, the triggers is the next question I have.
Yeah. So in my family system, I wanted to mitigate everyone being triggered because it made me feel unsafe. As a kid, the way I internalized, you know, my dad and my sister going at it, or the way I internalized, you know, my dad and my brother going at it, I was kind of like, hey, maybe the way I can get what I need is I'll go be the achiever. And that is it's the least disruptive way I can get attention in an environment where my brother and sister, you know, demanded attention in a different way. But also as I got a little bit older with my family dynamic is when I was about 21, my parents got divorced and my mother had a really tough time with that. And in some ways I parented her from that moment until her eventual death, you know, and had to take on some responsibility for her in a lot of different ways, emotionally, financially. And I think that just further fueled this, it is my role to hold everybody together, to fix everybody. And I think it's because people came to view me as that person because they knew they could rely on me and I was consistent and I'll be the first one to show up when you have a problem. But I also think it makes me feel, it's not just other people. It makes me feel needed or makes me feel valued. And it's something I'm good at. You know, I mean, my career is centered around putting things in order, organizing companies, reorganizing the structure to go down a path to fix all the things, you know, that are broken over the course of 1, 3, and 5 years. I've built a career at fixing things. And I think that's at the heart of it is that's how I feel valued and worthy and meaningful to people. And it's work I have to do still.
Yeah, no, yeah. I love that. And one of the things I love about you and the reason I wanted to interview you is, you know, we followed each other on TikTok and you have this, you know, amazing personality. But in between the dances and the smiles, you drop a few moments of vulnerability. And I remember one of your videos where you were highlighting how you are prone to self-sabotage. And It struck me because it's a moment of self-awareness that not many people be.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Willing to admit. Now, you've talked about triggers and you wanted to be a buffer between triggers and your family, but being able to identify this part of yourself that likes sabotage, talk about this. What do you mean by you are prone to self-sabotage?
Such a good question. So I think I know the video you're talking about, and some people did comment and say, I don't think that's self-sabotage. Like, I think that's you like leaning into and being brave. And there is a really fine line. You know, I think the place where self-sabotage has come into play a lot for me has been on the dating side of things after my divorce. And some of it is in who I would choose, like initially, right? Like when you, for me, I was married for 20 years and then came out on the dating scene. I had no idea, where I even stood sort of in the
very different
dating.
Very different, Amy.
Very different. Oh my gosh. And I really got to, you know, how naive I was, didn't play. And, you know, listen, we grow, we learn, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think though, the self-sabotage thing, a good example is, you know, I had a tendency initially, and even still, this is something I'm working through, where it's easier to pick someone who one needs fixing to kind of tie that in. So I noticed self-sabotage in that area where it was like, okay, this is someone who maybe isn't exactly my equal in some areas. And I don't think people have to be equal in all the areas, but we probably weren't in the same, I don't know how to appropriately say it, but we're two very different places in our lives, right?
Who hasn't done the work that you've done in yourself? And so, you know,
right.
Just wanted to stop by here before we get back to the episode. I wanted to let you all know that I do have a collective for people who are interested in developing their cultural competency skills, becoming more anti-racist. And it's a resource of things that you can do with your family, with your school, with yourself to work through your individual journey to become a better culturally competent leader. It's called UID Collective, and the link is in the show notes, but it's a mix of courses, it's a mix of resources, things you can download, and all you need to do is sign up as a member. It's a monthly membership. I'd love for you to check it out, use it with your friends, use it with your family, use it with yourself, okay? The link is in the show notes. It's called UID Collective, and it's for those of you that want to improve your cultural competency skills. Back to the episode.
That's what you mean by that. No, I understand that. And there's often an imbalance if someone isn't at least open to growth and self-improvement because there's a cap on their level and you're expansive and willing to be vulnerable and learn things. And so it can cause friction.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it can also be you're just like you're not even able to have conversations about the things, you know this, you know, as someone who's curious and wants to learn. And you know, this healing and growth journey has been something I've really, you know, dove into on a very academic level, which is the next part of my work, like getting out of the academics of it and kind of processing, you know, on a whole level. But to get back to your question about self-sabotage, what I noticed is when I got to a point that I had pushed myself to my own limit of, you know, my own level of bravery, it either took, for me to move past that, it either takes me being incredibly brave and acting even outside of myself and my comfort zone to do the thing that will help me be the version of me I'm trying to become. And I talk about that a little on my TikToks, you know, or playing it safe and making decisions that harm or go against the positive things I've worked for to keep me in this safe place, right? It's almost like self-sabotage in both ways. You know, I'd say either bravery or self-sabotage can either move you forward or move you backwards. And sometimes when I'm starting to feel a little bit unsettled, and before I'd done a lot of the work about feeling safe within myself, I'd say, whoa, I've pushed this too far now. I need to do something that'll screw it up, where it's not me, but it's something I do that leads to something unraveling this thing that scares me. And it's now I see it before it happens, thankfully, and some most of the time, but it takes a lot of work.
It does. It does. And even in those moments, you don't see it and you go back. I think the next step is the most important thing, which is the level of grace that you need to have for yourself, which is something I'm still working on, frankly. But, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, you at least you recognize it doesn't define right. you. This is the emotion, this is behavior. Take it as a learning step. And it doesn't mean I'm all of a sudden a failure, but it's one of those things
that
I think perfectionists have to figure out how to work through. Chief Strategy Officer. I think there's an interesting parallel with everything we've been discussing and you being a Chief Strategy Officer, because like you said earlier, there's an element of academics to it and putting things together and seeing things from afar and strategizing. And in your career, you've done this for, you said, 25 years and figuring out how to work with companies. I'm curious to see if you feel like that transferable skill of you being able to strategize led you to the organization and the conference that you formed. You're spearheading, actually.
Yeah, it absolutely did. You know, I think I'm certainly the type of person that I'm able to very quickly analyze a situation and figure out a plan and path forward. Some of this is back to the fixing aspect of things. Exactly. But I think probably the Women's Conference came as much, you know, I just had this inner pull. I knew and have known for a long time that I was meant to use my voice and my skills in a way that could be multiplied, you know, beyond, you know, the limited audiences I had. And I knew my story, you know, that being what it is, I knew that it was a common experience that a lot of us, you know, were having, especially in the professional world. And so, you know, I think my job is a chief strategy officer, chief of staff, like these different roles I've had have certainly been built around sort of some of my own, again, safety areas, right? Like if you're the chief strategy officer, or if you're the chief of staff, and this is me, I was the president of my last company, I'm that number two position. Like I really like being that number two position, even if I'm the person who's the face of it, it's not that, but I don't carry all the risk of it, you know, like the CEO does. Again, another place where, you know I play it a little safe. But, you know, I think that being strategic with the Women's Conference and thinking about how to bring women together in a way that could help us overcome the way we get in our own way, personally, like the way all the systems and messages that we've been sent. But also how women working with other women could improve so that collectively, if we come together, there's validation and power in that and support in that. And we could operate in a more successful way if we played on the same team versus this old school mentality of there's only so many seats at the table. No, we will make more seats at the table. The more of us we can continue to get, you know, in the varying ranks of companies. And so just changing that mind shift a little bit, I think has been, you know, a key.
Huh. So when does your conference happen?
Yeah, so it happens this year. It's happening December. Oh my gosh, you listen, this is like the main important thing I should be talking about. The 12th through the 15th, we have two versions this year. We're doing an in-person in Scottsdale, Arizona. Women in consumer finance, folks can go look that up directly, just as it's stated there. It's in Scottsdale, Arizona, in person. Then the next week we're doing a virtual version of it for, you know, all the women around the world who can't, you know, make it or aren't ready to travel. So we're going to try to do a hybrid for both people. But yeah, we're really excited about this year's event.
No, I'm really excited too, because it's obviously it's right before the new year, and we'll have the links in the show notes. So, you know, by the time this comes out, it'll be enough time for you to get the tickets. But the hybrid version, was that also partly influenced by COVID, or was that always the deal? Were you always going to?
Yeah, You know, it's interesting. So I started this conference when I was with my last organization. And I left that. I actually left ownership and the chairing of that with them as I've, you know, moved on and then just play a role now. But I think that, I guess it was last year, we were like, ah, we had to go 100% virtual. It was great. And then I was like, well, we can't lose all. The main thing for me was with the virtual, we were able to get to a level within the organization that is really the audience I want to get to. The women who are the 25-year-old Amy, the 30-year-old Amy, the 35-year-old Amy. I think those are really the women who benefit most. Oftentimes in the professional world, the women who are approved to travel are the women who have already been through and had the bumps and bruises and just benefit from the networking and some of that piece. But when we did the virtual last year, because of COVID, we noticed that it was also helping us achieve getting more of those women who are really our core audience there and make it accessible to them. So I was like, we can't go back now. We need to continue to make this accessible to women who can't get approval to travel for work, but would love to have content.
So the conference has a lot of personal and professional opportunities for women in transitional periods of their lives. Is that what I might get in that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the main thing about this conference is we put successful women on stage and I talk to them and ask them, tell us your story. You know, have you always been this polished professional CEO from the time you were 20, or what was your story? And it's amazing. And you'll appreciate this, I believe, with the work that you do. But the more stories you hear, one, the more you realize how common challenges are and experiences are. And it's so validating for someone who's 25, a woman who's 25 in the audience, who's just recently been given feedback maybe that she's too aggressive. She hears me on stage talking about how I've received similar feedback and how I've associated that with my worthiness. And that's first and foremost validating to say she got that feedback and she's out here still succeeding and making it happen. I can do this too. I can adjust it. So a lot of it really is about creating those moments where women can see themselves in other women like them, right? Not just who you see that makes it to TV or who makes it, you know, big on LinkedIn or whatever it is. You can see real life women who are succeeding, and it's just validating and empowering. And what I hope is that it is so empowering that women start to use their voice where they wouldn't have otherwise, because, you know, that's what it's all about.
Uh-huh. Well, now I'll make sure to grab the links from you so that we have that in the show notes. It sounds like an amazing conference.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
We're getting close to the end here. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts and legacy, right? So the next generation, and as you're modeling this level of vulnerability and womanhood, how do you see yourself doing that for your immediate family and the people coming after you outside of the conference in your personal life?
Yeah, in my personal life, you know, I think this is where, you know, my daughter's been a huge way. It's been a wake up call for me. Obviously, she's reaching the 12-year-old stage. And a lot of this journey has been right on time for me because I think I mentioned it in one of my TikToks that, you know, being a mom, I found, you know, very triggering. And honestly, dealing with my triggers and also recognizing the triggers in the people around me and understanding the source of why the reaction is the way it is. Really has been, you know, so foundational for me in realizing that I have to break these generational curses that have happened. Otherwise, I see the same tendencies and behaviors in my daughter. Now, and my daughter is not biologically my child. I adopted her when she was 2 weeks old. And so that's perfect proof that, you know, she's not repeating these behaviors because biologically she's predispositioned to some of these behaviors because of me, right? She's learning them through how I'm modeling those behaviors. And I think that I have a passion on two fronts as far as the next generation goes. One is, you know, mothers and daughters and family systems in general. I think the more we can get information out there about triggers and the source of those triggers and managing those, I think that changes how people start to operate and how they interact with one another, because most of the things I see blow up in media or, you know, even arguments I see on social media, a lot of it is you can tell that someone just doesn't know how to deal with what's underneath the anger or the reaction they're having based on what someone said. And I would say that this, and so I have to work on that within my family system, with my siblings, with, you know, my ex-husband who remains my closest friend. We are all working on that together. And then, you know, I think the other part of this is, you know, for the young women like me who, you know, because where I came from, you know, when I was coming through high school, because of the fact that my parents didn't have money, like guidance counselors didn't even talk to me about college. I didn't know how to apply to college. I'd never toured a college campus. My parents, neither of them graduated high school. So they were so happy to just get three kids through high school. They had done one better. And I had to literally walk into a random college and say, can you tell me how I go? Like, how do I enroll here? What is the process? And of course, that's not how it works. You don't just walk into a college and say, enroll me. But I got the information I needed. And so I mean, part of the work for me in healing myself is so that I can figure out the healthiest and most informed way that I can help the 16, 17, 18-year-old Amy who has great potential, president of the Future Business Leaders of America, all these things, but still somehow falls through the cracks because of the way our system is set up and how it tends to favor, you know, those who have a lot tend to get a lot more. And, you know, those who have to work their way from a different environment, it's a struggle. And so I think I can use my journey to go back now and help support and validate women like me earlier in their lives so that they don't realize their worthiness at 44. They can realize they're worth it from the start.
Beautiful. Well, I mean, we've come to the final question, and thank you for sharing. The final question for me is my mission statement reframed as a question. And I always ask my guests this. So, Amy, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
Yeah. You know, I think it's in all the things I've said here. Like, it's about, for me, I could live a very quiet life, you know, show up at work, be dutiful, love my child, be good to my friends. But this commitment I have to growing and evolving as a person and the things I've learned and the self-awareness I have, I can't believe, and my ability to communicate, my desire to communicate, I can't sleep on that. There are so many days where I'm like, oh, why is this so important to me that I articulate my thoughts and write in my journal constantly about realizations and connections I've had? And it's all because I think I'm in a position as a person to turn what I've learned and to turn the difficult things I've been into. I can turn those into lessons and inspiration and stories for other people to hopefully arrive at this conclusion sooner and live full, anxiety-free, you know, lives that allow them to really go after and pursue and make the most of this really short window of time we have, as far as we know, at least on this planet. So that's how I hope to be brave enough to keep showing up to figure out how I can make that difference happen.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. This has been a pleasure. I appreciate the vulnerability and the authenticity. I'm sure many people are going to be finding themselves in your story. And I'm looking forward to hearing the good news and the impact that your conference makes when it happens in December.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to share. Thank you so much again for inviting me here. It's always so great to listen to all of your wisdom. And so it's such an honor to be sitting here with you and chatting about these things. So thanks again.
My pleasure. And kings, queens, and royalty, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.